Hello, Gary Alcoholic.
Gary.
Thank you, Dale, for inviting me to speak. My sponsor is here, so thank you to my sponsor for coming. I have some notes. Just when Dale asked me, I reached out. Okay, a couple things. Sorry, let me. Okay, Gary Nader. My sobriety date is 11/11/19. I have a sponsor who's here. I have a home group. Common Solution in Charlottesville. That's been my home group for about 3.5, probably 4 years or so. Just to kind of a basis of I've pretty much known, and I've been an alcoholic my whole life. I drank my whole life since I was probably 16 or 17. I'll touch on that a little bit. But so a couple of things I'm going to talk about is the idea of faith and higher power. I always believed in a higher power from when we were raised Catholic, when we were younger, but just, I always pray to God, to my higher power. And that's something I've always had. So when coming to AA, coming into the rooms, that was easy for me to do at the beginning, just because I didn't know what else I was going to do. And turning it over to my higher power was not difficult, just because I wasn't sure what else to do, and I kind of run out of other options, and I tried everything. So I'll hit that in a little bit, but something I wanted to read about, I was trying to come up with an idea, and I wanted to have everything planned to what I was going to do, but it didn't really feel right. And I, a couple of days ago, when I read through this, it was something that was like, I read through it, I don't know, maybe about 6 months ago, and it just hit home, and I was like, oh, I'm going to base what I'm going to talk about around that. So this is from Daily Reflections, which I read every day after I do like things I'm grateful for, serenity prayer, just praying in general. I try and do that every morning when I get up, not really to center myself, but just first thing I want to do, give thanks for what I have. I'm very grateful. And it's just a good positive way to start the day. And that's, for me, get the ball rolling on a positive note. I think that's really important. The idea of faith, this is Daily Reflections, March 6th. The idea of faith. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 47. The idea of faith is a very large chunk to swallow when fear, doubt, and anger around in and around me. Sometimes just the idea of doing something different, something I am not accustomed to doing, can eventually become an act of faith if I do it regularly. And I do it without debating whether it's the right thing to do. When a bad day comes along and everything is going wrong, a meeting or a talk with another drunk often distracts me just enough to persuade me that everything is not quite as impossible, as overwhelming as I had thought. In the same way, going to a meeting or talking to a fellow alcoholic are acts of faith. I believe I'm arresting my disease. These are ways I slowly move towards faith and a higher power. So the part that like really sticks out to me, and the part that really hit home for me, was just when I'm having a bad day and everything is going wrong, to persuade me that everything is not quite as impossible or overwhelming as I thought. So part of my personality, and especially before I came into the rooms, was it was definitely about me. I was definitely very self-righteous, definitely very, I was more important and very selfish. So things are not always as bad as we make them out to be. That was a really big part of my attitude, especially when I was drinking, like just always concentrating on the negative, especially in small things. I could have 10 things going on in my life, and the top and 9 of them are big, and they're all on the positive side. But the one thing that I naturally gravitate towards is the one that isn't. And I would continue to berate people around me, my wife, my kids, my friends. It was always about what I did, the part of what I did not have, or the part that wasn't right, or the part that wasn't exactly how I wanted it to be. And that could be as something as small as what we're going to have for dinner, our plans for later this week, what we're going to do with the kids, how we discipline them, anything as small as something that doesn't mean anything at all, up to the biggest decisions of the day. I still do that. It doesn't matter that I'm not drinking anymore, but I am able to take the things that come at us daily and think about them, have some patience, think it through, talk it through with my partner or whoever else is making that decision with me or whatever, and come out of it without it being about me. And the muscle memory that it has taken me, I'll be like, it's taken me a long time to, one, be patient where I'm not coming out and saying the first thing that comes out of my mouth. That is also something that was very difficult for me, because if we were going to have a discussion or you're going to talk about something, you were going to hear how I thought about it. That was just the way it was. And that sometimes it is right now. But it took me some time to realize maybe everybody doesn't care what I have to say. Maybe it doesn't really all about what I have to say and how I want it to be. And man, it is so much easier. It is so much easier to let things go. And I truly believe that my higher power has helped me work through the steps, but also work with me internally to be pleasant to be around and not having to worry about what I was going to say. I really felt like drawing towards the negativity was really like a part of my DNA, and that I didn't think there was anything I could do about it. It didn't have anything to do with my drinking. It had to do with my attitude towards others. But man, I had a couple drinks, or I'd be under the influence, and man, you're going to hear about it. And even if you didn't want to, I did. I talk a lot. My girls are 9 and 11, and I talk to them about sweating the small stuff. And they kind of look at me and ask me. It literally took me 40 years to figure it out. So I'm talking to them about it, where I want to pass on to them and have them learn things. But not sweating the small stuff has been something that has been really important to me, but it's also helped me live my life in a better and more positive way. A couple years, I graduated college in 1999, and then I lived in Erie, Pennsylvania, where my grandma and my mom lived for like 3 or 4 years. And that was, I mean, that was after college, and I was drinking a lot. And like my grandma, my nana would always just, why are you getting so upset? Why, why? I would talk to her about just the things that I was getting upset about. And she gave me this thing, and I still have it. And she cut it out of the newspaper, and I kept it in my car, and then I moved it to the other car, and then I just always would look at it when I was struggling, sober or not sober. And oh man, my nana, she was the best. It was 10 commandments for living, I'm sorry, 10 commandments for a long and peaceful life. And a couple of the highlights, like, thou shalt not worry, for most worry is the most unproductive of all human activities. Thou shalt not be fearful, for most of the things never come to pass. And those first two, like, I will never, I'm gonna probably, I'm not, I will never get rid of this. This is something I will keep forever. But the first one, just the amount of worrying that I did and that I caused for others, has it is so high. And the amount of bullcrap and the amount of things that I cause to people around me, it's a lot to think about. But I really try not to worry about it, things as much, because a lot of the worrying that I did, a lot of those things just never even happened. I would manifest some of these things that it just didn't make sense from a rational standpoint, but in here it was rational. And just when I was writing down some notes, for some reason, this was at my work desk, and I put it in my book, and I tied it in. I wanted to tie it in with my reading, just that, or from what I was saying today, is just Alcoholics Anonymous has really taught me to not sweat the small stuff and be able to take life's challenges as they come at me, but at the same time, navigating it, not dodging life's problems. Okay, so I'm going to hit some stuff in my childhood growing up, some stuff in college, my 20s and 30s, and then 30s and 40s. I pretty much drank the entire time, so I just have a couple things in here about it. So wasn't that good. Okay, so my childhood, my parents always had alcohol in the house. Whenever to other people's house, they always had alcohol. It was just like, I didn't really know any better. Like my parents partied and drank, but like it looked like it was social, but like it was, whenever we were doing things socially, there was alcohol involved. That was normal. Like, whenever I went to my grandma's, wherever it was always involved. So I didn't really know any better. So like, yeah, whatever. I had a really good childhood though. My mom was the alcoholic. I'm pretty sure my dad was. I have a couple of uncles that were. Like, I love my brother and sister, and they can make like their own choices, but I'm pretty sure the both of them are too. And I love them both. My brother's my best friend. We've gone through some really tough times together. Like, our kids are around the same age, and he moved a couple hours away, but we went through a lot of things together at the same time. And part of growing up in my childhood was being in an alcoholic home. I didn't really know any different. So they didn't really bother me that much. Like I said before, I was raised Catholic. We went to church. We went less as we got older, and like, I don't know if my brother and sister had this, but I always had a very good one-on-one relationship with God and my higher power. I always did. It was always something I felt that I could lean on. That's what made coming into the room so much easier for me. But as we got older, we went to church less and less. And as we got into like our teens, we would sleep in the basement. So that way my mom couldn't come into our room and tell us we were going to church. And we would keep all the lights closed. And then once we got past like 10:30, like, cool, we don't got to go to church today. So I grew up in a very small town in Western Pennsylvania. But I graduated with like 80 people. Not a lot to do. Sports. And we drank. That's what we did in high school. I started probably like maybe 9th or 10th grade. I was a late bloomer. But like, I drank for a social aspect. Everybody did. I don't even really think I had much like peer pressure. It was just like, yeah, whatever. It's not a big deal. So being in a small town, everybody knew everybody. That was just kind of what we did. We didn't really have a lot to do. So then that's what we did. Naturally, that led into other things. Didn't really get into too much trouble in high school. I enjoyed it. I had fun. I'm in still contact with one person I graduated with, but it was more social. I wasn't really blacking out or anything yet, but socially I could kind of tell it was a lot more fun when we had beer. It was a lot more fun when we had alcohol. Like we would go and camp out. Like, and this is how I justify it. Like, we didn't drink and drive. We all camped out. Or we'd stay at someone's house or whatever it was. We never drank and we never drove. So my friend, we were like, we're responsible drinkers. We're doing what we should be. But, and again, I just thought this is what everybody did when they were in high school. So let me see, this is going into 1995. Applying for colleges, doing a couple of things. Always wanted to go to Penn State. I grew up in Western PA. I was going to Penn State games since I was like 4. And I had to go to summer school. I kind of got waitlisted or whatever it was. But I had tickets to see the Grateful Dead three times, and Jerry, that was when Jerry was still alive, and I was like, well, I can't go to summer school. I can't do, I'm not doing that. We got tickets to see. We've been playing this for months. I'm not doing that. End up going to a smaller school in Ohio, not Ohio State, Ohio University. Sorry, man, I see your sweatshirt. But we would go up all, like, back, we would go up, hang out, party all the time. All my freshman roommate was from Bexley, so we'd go up to Columbus all the time. That was when things really started to go. I started really drinking. I mean, oh God, a lot of blacking out and just waking up in the same spots we were, like we'd be watching football on a Monday night and wake up in the same spot in the middle of the night. It's not good. I mean, just a lot of binge drinking. But I mean, that was when I was like, man, not that I needed alcohol to function, but I needed it. It was just everywhere. And I didn't, not that I didn't know how to say no, I didn't want to, and I didn't see any repercussions until, like, then there were some things that happened. So I got my first checkbook when I went to college. I don't even know. My first check that I wrote was to the city for public urination. Literally, my first check I wrote, and I was just, and it was kind of a precursor to the other things that happened. So during my freshman year, we experimented with all sorts of things. I actually told a story to a couple of buddies earlier today, but lost my train of thought. Okay, we started getting into a lot that freshman year. That fall, the Steelers went to the Super Bowl, and I missed the entire second half of the Super Bowl. I'd been waiting all years for this just to go, and they went, and I missed the entire second half because I was completely blacked out drunk. And, like, waking up, like, late that night and not knowing fully what happened in the game, I was waiting to watch and enjoy with my friends. It was just like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing? But again, it wasn't the shame, and I'd say the regret, but the shame was there. But it was easy because there wasn't anyone who was seeing everything. So it was like I could kind of get away with A and B because they didn't see it, and then move to C and D, and I could piece things together and put up a really, really good facade. But also, like, I had a really good group of friends, and we were a lot of fun, and we were able to procure many different things from many different local people. So we had it really good. And I was, but okay, so also in my freshman year, we were on quarters. So the first quarter would end right before Thanksgiving, and we would have a break from Thanksgiving till New Year's. So I would get to go home, party with all my high school friends, and then go back to college. But when I went back the second semester, we're like, man, a lot of people are gone. And some of the guys that we knew in our dorm, the ones that didn't party in high school, but then completely let loose at college, couldn't figure it out, couldn't go to class, so they got kicked out. So I had a badge of honor that I drank and partied in high school, so I knew how to handle college, and I knew how to handle it. So I literally, I was like, see, I didn't get kicked out. I can do it. I'm good. And I got good grades because I went to class. Like, I went to class. I did the work. But I could have done so much better, but it was all justified. All my drinking, everything was justified. I got a 3-1. Like, I'm good. My goal's a 3-0. I'm over my goal. And it was just the most ludicrous thinking. But I mean, just oh God. I mean, the consistent blackouts, waking up, okay, cool. I got my wallet. I didn't have phones. Thank God. We didn't have no recording, no phones, anything. But like, at the end of the, okay, cool. I got my wallet. I'm good. But then some guilt started to creep in. Some shame started to seep in. And then it was like, I just continually was doing this. Met my first wife in college. We're very close. Ended up, we ended up moving a couple places together, getting married. This was like my early mid-20s, like a lot of partying, a lot of drinking. And then like my first like big thing that happened, I got a reckless driving. I don't know how I didn't get, like I took out a telephone pole. I bought a car. This car was a month old, totaled my car. Oh my God. I had weed and my pipe in my car. Like I was so out of it. I took it. I threw the stuff in the woods. Like I didn't know what was going on. Like I didn't even see the telephone pole. But like I didn't realize it was knocked over. It was so bad. And like that was the first time I'd ever gotten any speeding tickets, that type of stuff. But like, and all I could think about was like, holy crap, like where do I go from here? What am I gonna do? How am I gonna explain this? All the stuff that I've been kind of not really hiding, but doing a good job of spreading my drinking around so nobody really saw what was going on, including my wife. She just didn't know. So I hired a good lawyer, spent a bunch of money, got into a reckless driving. That was a miracle. So I had to take some classes. Went to the classes. I think I had to go to 3 AA meetings. Literally just had to have them sign the sheet. This was goodness gracious. I didn't know my butt from my elbow. It was brutal. So went through these classes, went through this. I remember one of the things we watched the movie 28 Days. That was one of the things we did with Sandra Bullock. And I remember thinking during that movie, we were watching it, and like, I was like, man, there's no way people think that about me. There's no way like my friends and people around me can think like I'm like sloppy like that. Like, God, I'm not like that. That's not me. So fast forwarding a little bit, we ended up moving to Richmond. Got divorced, shockingly. Shocker. Before this happened, my brother lived in Charlottesville. We lived in Richmond. I showed up at my brother's house. I was like, hey, man, I don't got anywhere to go. Live by himself. He's like, come in. You're good. Got divorced. Very dark 6 months. Very, very dark. Oh, my God. I drank a lot. I mean, this was probably the first time where I was waking up on the weekends, cracking a beer, hungover, having a beer, hair of the dog, all that. Drink it during the week. Didn't have to get up to like 9 for my job. So it was not good. That was probably as dark a time as I've had up to that point. Yeah, I don't even like to think about that time, but at the same time, it's good for me to reflect on it. But that was a really, really dark time for me. I did not think, one, I was making myself the victim. I didn't think I'd ever be able, no one would ever want to be around me enough to spend time with me, let alone date or marry me. And then like, I was like, well, I'm not going to have kids. That's out the window. But a lot of it was feeling bad for myself. Just not what you want to do. Slowly but surely, I kind of started building my life back up, and I'm staying in Charlottesville, which is great. I love it here. But still, continually partying with my brother and my friends, continually partying with my sister and her friends. It was just, I kind of got through that dark time, and then went back to business as usual. Let's see, we're getting into like my early 30s, same thing, party, drinking. By that time, my dad had moved to Charlottesville. And when I grew up, I was closer with my mom than I was my dad. Over time, him and I started to really, really form a bond. He was around a lot. We've spent a lot of time together. And he was a good listener. He would always give me good advice, but he was a good listener. And it was just it was awesome having him around. It just it was just it really changed my life a lot. In 2010, I ended up meeting Lindsay, who's my wife now. And I don't know if I've ever told this story. I might have told it to my sponsor, but we met at my dad was supposed to go take a job in Bermuda, which he did, but I met her at our his going away party. I wasn't even going to go because I was upset. But anyway, ended up meeting her. We ended up going out like a week later. I drank probably like a couple more beers than I should have, and she drove my car home. Oh my God. We got pulled over and she was doing a sobriety test. And I was like, and I was thinking in the car, you literally had another opportunity of someone who's really cool, really down to earth. And you literally on the, it might've been our second date, whatever, right at the beginning, jacked it up. And it's like, that was when I started really having some shame and guilt. I'm like, at what cost is someone gonna have to die? Are you, am I gonna have to die? Like, when is it, when is gonna be enough enough? Anyway, keep going, keep going. She didn't, she, when, sorry, back, she went, her sobriety test. I'm sorry, I am a little bit spastic and I do jump around, so I'm hoping everything is making sense. But she passed the sobriety test, had to leave my car on our car on the side of the road, and like that ride home and like that night, she didn't really say that much to me. But I was like, man, I think this is over. But somehow, some way, out of the fire, she yeah, somehow. So we started dating, and I'm like, oh my God, like I told some of my buddies, like I met someone, she went to Penn State, she went to Western PA, she's really cool. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it's happening. So fast, well, this was February when we met, March, April. So we get to around Christmas time. And I, until the last few years, I never really liked Christmas. I never really liked the holiday season just because it's, again, very selfish. When my parents got divorced, it was right after I graduated high school. We had to just go back and forth on Christmas. And it was like we always had to travel Christmas Day. And one was jealous of the other. And it's just hard on my brother and sister and I. And I just didn't really enjoy the holiday time. So I always had this stigma of like, oh, the holidays. But there wasn't a lot of people that did that. So I really started to try and fake it to make it around the holiday season. But our first Christmas together, we had a Christmas party at our apartment that we lived at, and like things were good, like during the party, everything, things were good. And then I pounded a bunch of wine and passed out on the couch on our first Christmas Eve together. It was awesome. She was really, really pissed. I woke up on Christmas morning. It's like, oh yeah, how's that? What'd you think about last night? I was like, I was like, oh, she's asking me these questions. She's like, yeah, because you were passed out. You missed all the stuff we were doing. Oh, we didn't do gifts. And I was just like, crap, man, this is not good. So, of course, I'm so sorry. This won't happen again. Please believe me. And I always bust into you. You don't know how hard it is. I'm victim, victim, victim. It's all, it's life's so hard. I guess I'll drink it. All the time. So, I don't know how many can relate to this, but so every 3 or 4 months, like, you know, normal amount of drinking, every 3 or 4 months, blackout, something bad, went out with my buddies, came home, whatever it was. And it was this just rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. And I could tell this was going, she was just like, she kind of knew this was what it was. And I hadn't had any really big consequences, at least not any for enough to make me stop drinking. I had consequences, but none of them were bad enough for like, oh man, I gotta stop. Like that's gotta be the solution. So this was just again and again and again and again. At that time, I was driving a lot for work during the day, like hour and a half to where I worked. I ran like 11 stores for Sprint, so I'd go to my stores, whatever. So I'd always talk to my brother, man, things are really good, but I gotta figure out my drinking, man. Or he would say that to me because he did. He we would do a lot of the same things, and it was just on. It was always like, okay, I'm not gonna drink during the week. I'm not gonna drink liquor. I'm not gonna drink brown liquor. I mean, I tried every just, and it didn't really matter. Okay, so my brother and one of my other buddies also, we tried a whole month off. We were trying to figure out the month to do it. This and like, so we were talking through it. I'm like, God, so like, you can't do it in January because we have football weekends. February, Super Bowl, and then there's a couple other things. March, you have March Madness, and like we're going through. So we ended up picking July. It took us this long to do this. This is it. So we did. We would figure out activities to do. We literally, like three of us, we would go out for ice cream. We would go to the mall. Like we would do, like we'd go hiking, which I like to hike and do outside stuff. But we were just like, we have to do stuff where we're not around. And we were 2 weeks in. And a member of the Grateful Dead was playing at the pavilion. And the whole time thinking, leading up to this, I'm like, how am I gonna, like, that's gonna be hard. I don't know if I'm gonna go to the show if we're gonna do this, which is just stupid anyway. But so we had worked so hard for those 2 weeks that we were able to, we gave ourselves a mulligan. And I golfed growing up. I am not a mulligan person. You play your score. That's just the way it is. If you're keeping score and it's like a tournament or something. But so we decided we were good. We earned it. We earned our stripes, man, those 2 weeks. Can you believe it? Unbelievable. So, of course, after that, we just tore it up the rest of the month. We ended up getting married. I ended up getting married to Lindsay like 2 years later. We got married in Key West, which was really, really cool. Oh my God. The day before, not the wedding day, the day before, we went out and we got like, I don't know what it was, this big drink or whatever, but I didn't know. There was like a shot of 151 like jammed in there or whatever. So I got back. Oh my God. I got back. Our rehearsal dinner, I got back from going out. I was in my room, passed out. They were trying to call me, knock on my door. Thank God I got up. The freaking fire in her eyes when she saw me get up from the bed, and I won't ever forget it. And I was like, holy crap. All the planning, all the time, the money that went into this, and this is what you're gonna do. I was like, man, you're literally gonna mess this up there was only 40 people, with your family, everybody here. So went to the, drank a bunch of water, whatever I had to do. Went to the rehearsal dinner, good rehearsal dinner. Can you believe it that we got married at 5? I didn't drink anything before my own wedding. Give me a medal. Give me a medal, please. So good, everything. Wedding. We had our first daughter right out 2013. Right at the beginning of 2013. Slowed down. I don't know when it was. Drove. Oh God. Got home. It was not good. Had to go to rehab. Signed up and went to Blue Ridge Rehab for 6 months. This was 2013. Went to the meetings because I had to get the thing signed. Always made sure I was on time. This signed for me. You go to three meetings a week. I think it was 3 a week. Now that was easy. People were complaining about, I can go to three. That's no big deal. I'm not going to go to more than three, but you're going to do three. All through this, talking to my dad, telling him what's going on. Like, man, I'm struggling. I'm in rehab. Doing all right, but still I'm just struggling. did the outpatient rehab. I don't know when it was. Went probably 6 or 8 months. Went back to drinking real slow. Only had like one or two beers. No more than that. I capped it at two. Again, metal. With our second baby girl, 2014, late in 2014, so around 20 months apart. All right. Kind of me. Really got to buckle down here. Train kept rolling. Guys just kept rolling. Changed jobs in 2016. I took a job with Starbucks. Had to get up really early every day. Really early. It was good, but at the same time, like, I was just so got to get up earlier, so I just started drinking earlier. Awesome. Okay, so going through the next couple of years, struggled. Same thing. Every 3-4 months, I'm sorry. So this was November 10th, 2019. This is before COVID, but it just seems like eons ago. One of my buddies was in town. We all went out, watched a bunch of football. Penn State lost a heartbreaking game. I was completely blacked out. Drove home, got home, have no idea. All I know was I remember looking in my wife's eyes and like our kids were in bed, but I don't know what I said. She later told me what I said, but it was, she said I had a look of a madman in my eyes and someone who truly deep down hated her. And I'm not sure if that's how I felt during that time, but whatever came out of my mouth, I had control over, but I didn't. And after that, whatever I said, she called my dad. My dad came up and got me, came over to go, and I stayed the night at his house. And I remember waking up a couple hours later and just this fear and just the guilt. And it was unlike anything else I'd ever had. Waking up and just, I couldn't get back to sleep. I was up all night and just maybe going back to sleep and waking up in the morning with just this fear of God inside of what have I done? Like, I had every, like, the stuff that I had wanted, the stuff that I had manifested in and worked hard towards, I had it right in front of me. And shockingly, I had completely jacked it up. And I went home. She wasn't there, thank God. Got my stuff, went to work that day. Just dreading to go home. And I wasn't sure what I was going to walk into. I didn't know if I was going to walk into packed bags. I didn't know what, if it was going to be like, you need to leave. I didn't know what. So the line was drawn that she's like, you're either got to go to AA, you got to do whatever it is. This cannot continue. I cannot, will not continue with our children, which I wholeheartedly agreed. It couldn't. This was not sustainable. This was not how I didn't want my kids to view me the way that I viewed my mom and my brother and sister did. I didn't want that. And I knew if I didn't figure this out and I didn't make a wholehearted effort, 100% in, it was gonna be gone. There was no doubt in my mind. So I, that day, after we had that talk, what I was going to do, what I was going to change, I looked at the AA roster and looked at everything, and I figured out a meeting I could go to. So I went to that meeting on Sunday. My sponsor was there. A couple people that are in my, who come to my home, to our meeting on Thursdays were there. I don't even know what I said. I can remember the faces there, but I can just remember just being very honest and vulnerable and really just being honest about, I don't have anywhere else to go. I don't have anybody else to turn to. I've tried everything that I know of that can help me. tell me what I need to do, or tell. So I just, and I did, and I shut my mouth and I just listened. I think for the first time, I wasn't worried about what other people needed to hear out of my mouth. I was more worried about what I needed to hear out of their mouths. And when I saw, I was like, when I saw people at the meetings and the kindness, asking how I was doing, the openness, the acceptance, I had never had that. And it was so nice when other people talked, when other people spoke, to be able to relate. And how many times I just nodded. Oh, yeah. It was so nice to be around other people that thought the same way that I did. Because I knew when I was younger, I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew, like, people don't drink the same way that I do. Like, the rat race in my head that just never stopped. But it started, like, as I continually, like, one day at a time was huge for me. Huge. The thought, I remember that first week of never drinking again, was so big and so overwhelming that I didn't even do it a day at a time. It was, what time is it? Get to 7. Then, hey, get to 8. And like, okay, then the next day I was like, okay, I did it like 2-hour increments. And like, it was literally once I got a couple days behind me, I was like, okay, that's something to build on. Like, you can't boil the ocean in a day. You can't do everything in it. So it's one day at a time. And once I started to understand that in my head, that, hey, one day, I know I'm not going to drink today. And whatever I had to do to get to noon and then 4 and then 8, whatever I had to do that day, if I did 90 and 90, I'll do meeting every, whatever it is. That was what I did. And once I started building up some days, and then a week, and then a few more, and then I asked Craig to be my sponsor, then things really took off. But once I went to enough meetings where I understood that my drinking wasn't different than other people's, I wasn't special, or I wasn't had something else that nobody else did. And once I became comfortable with saying, I'm Gary, I'm an alcoholic. Like, it's okay. I really started to lean into my higher power. I really started cranking up because I felt more he was listening. And it was like, then I could start turning these days into weeks and going to meetings and meeting other alcoholics. And it was like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. So I'm doing pretty well. Like, a meeting with my sponsor, So last April, one of my really good friends from college, his wife passed away, and I had seen her the September before that. And wow, she was, I mean, I thought I drank a lot, and like, I was watching her, and this is when this was during my sobriety, and I was shocked. But I knew when my friend and my other friends let me know that Diana had passed away, like, the first thing I thought about was alcoholism. But I mean, my friend was struggling. Our kids are around the same age. They live out in Colorado. So I went out there for the viewing and everything. And then I got a message from my ex-wife asking about Joffy, our friend. And I asked her, I was like, hey, you know, is there any way we could talk for a couple of minutes? If not, no big deal. I didn't want it to make it a big deal. But she's like, yeah, totally. So it's a couple months ago. And this was a big, big, big step for me. And I was like super nervous, because I was just like, oh my God, like, all the things. I had all this stuff written down. So we talked on the phone, and I was like, hey, you know, I really appreciate you letting me talk to you, whatever. And like, she was floored. She's like, I didn't really think it was that bad. like, I can't believe I'm so happy for you. But either way, I didn't let her. I rattled off all these things I had written down that I wanted to say. And I'll tell you what, it made me so happy that one, she was accepting, and two, it was just something I had been waiting years to do. And that was one of my, other than to my current wife, that was the best amends I had done, just because I know she had seen so much and we had been through so much together that was a giant weight lifted off my shoulders. And I'm just so grateful to be able to have that opportunity. There's no way I'd be able to do that without these rooms. I'm just so grateful that I was able to have that conversation. So powering through like 2019, I can't remember if this was, I think this was right around, but my dad had some issues with his arm and went to a couple doctors, a couple things that was, someone's having this other arm. And I was just like, Dad, like something, this just doesn't seem right. But he was driving, he was fine. He was able to go to get himself around, take care of himself. So it was about 6 or 8 months later, I went to a doctor's appointment with him. And the doctor was doing these tests on him. And I was like, I'd read about Lou Gehrig's disease before, so I kind of knew a little bit about it. When she was doing these tests, I will never forget this at UVA. And like, I don't, when she's like, it's just confirming what I already know, is that my dad had ALS. You could have knocked me over with a feather when she said that. Because I knew what it was, and I don't think he did. And I knew, my dad was just always an optimist, you know, and once, and that was one thing I loved about him, he was so optimistic. And I'm not. And when it registered with him, and like that there's a couple of conversations that have changed my life. And that was one of them when we had that. And like, so as this progressed, I went and saw him every day, like slowly but surely, he was really deteriorating. And it was like eating me up. It's like he mentally was sharp, but he was physically being deteriorating, and it was really, really difficult. So when it started to go fast, so I would not have been, I would, I, okay. Prior to me being in the rooms, I probably would have been selfish where I wouldn't have gone to see him as much. I don't think there was a day the last 2 years where I didn't go see him at his house, and then when he got put into a facility, just because I knew that I was given an opportunity through Alcoholics Anonymous and with my sponsor and my, like, the support of others, like I would not have had the opportunity to understand the gravity of it or to be unselfish enough where I wanted to make sure the time I had with him was maximized. I knew that it would, who knows how much of it was going to be left, but I didn't want there to be one day where I didn't see him and let him know how important he was to me and how much he had helped me. And there's no way I would have done that or made the decision to be, I would have been more selfish prior to this. That is one thing that Alcoholics Anonymous has really helped me understand, and I'm very grateful for. I'm not sure. It was 2 years ago in February that my dad passed away. And after the first year, I was like, sometime, like, I'm gonna have to start, like, filling this void or getting past this. And I had a conversation with somebody else who lost their dad, and they just said, I said, I was like, I feel like it's a void that I can't fill. And I can't not replace it, but fill that void. And he just said, he's just like, I have it. And I've come to the realization that I may never be able to fill that void. But one thing that makes me so happy and proud of is that during those last couple of years, not the last like couple of weeks, like there was never one day after work or during the weekends that I didn't go see him and spend that time with him. And if this would have been before I made changes in my life, that's not how it would have gone. I would have come up with excuses, and I would not have been able to be there for him like I wanted to and like I was. So the commitment around my higher power really helped me get closer with him and just really helped change our relationship. But also it's changed me forever. I'm just so grateful to have had that. I don't want to ever say there was a good time for him to get sick ever, but sometimes things align and good can come out of bad. And that was one thing I talked about with him, was how happy I was that I got to spend time with him at the end and that my girls did, and how important that was. But at the same time, I was most grateful just for the opportunity to not have a selfish attitude and put others before me. And that's just something I wouldn't have done before. I literally have a piece of paper that says low lights of drinking, highlights of sobriety. So I have a much better relationship with the people around me. My relationship with my higher power is very strong, and I could not be more grateful for that. I feel like I'm more reliable and dependable. If I like make a commitment, I always make sure I see it through. I think that's really important. Not that I didn't do that before, but when you say you're going to do something, I think it's really important to follow up. Walk the walk, not talk the talk. That's something I've always said, and I just think it's really important to show up and be there. I'm much more patient. I find it much easier to hold my tongue, especially when it's something that's not positive. Because if there's something to be said, I will say it. And most of the time, if it's something negative, I just will, because I feel like people need to hear me talk or hear my, you know, what I have to say, which generally isn't always the case, shockingly. But you know what? Now, I mean, I'm still on my journey, but I could not be more grateful to be part of the rooms, to be around other alcoholics, to be there to support others like they have supported me. I'm just very blessed and very lucky. All right, I made it 50 minutes, but I have like a couple of other things. Like, the impact that being in my home group, having a job in my home group, I always do that. I always put away coffee because like we do our jobs like every 2 months, but I always put coffee away because one, I know how to do it. I can do it quick, and then I can help put chairs away. But having a job in my home group, it's an easy job and it's really small, but like I love to do it. It makes me feel like I'm making a difference. And then I end up staying after the meetings and talking to people and doing what I'm supposed to be doing at the meetings, which is awesome. I love it. Without taking it one day at a time, without the support and love of people around me, there's no way I would be able to do this. But I know when the rubber meets the road, this comes down to my higher power. For me, having a positive attitude and having positive energy, not making excuses, being patient and listening, those are things that I didn't really care about before I came into the rooms, or maybe I said I did, but a lot of times I was just waiting to say something, waiting for somebody else to say something so I could just tell them what I thought. And I still have that inside, but I just don't act on it as much as I did before. I really do enjoy listening to people and others' thoughts and what makes them tick and their story, where they've come from. And I don't think I would be able to listen or listen intently, but actually care the way that I do about others without going through the steps, without believing in my higher power and literally talking, praying throughout the day. I'm just very grateful to be here. I really appreciate Dale asking me to speak tonight. Guess it's day with daylight savings now, which is cool. But I really appreciate it. I know I don't want to see, I don't want to just ramble for extra time for the case of rambling, but this group, so I like I have a couple familiar faces of people I've met. It's been really nice. Like, thank you so much for listening, and I really appreciate being here.
Yeah.